Hi, I'm Kay Eck, and welcome to my podcast, Alive and Kicking, Stories of Waking Up. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I have with me today my dear friend, Diana Sheik. How are you, Diana?
Good. Thanks it's so for good having
to,
me.
It's so good to be with you here today.
It's good to see you.
Good to see you too. So let's just jump right in. You know, we're talking about kind of our personal journey through this ascension path. And, you know, whether you use the word ascension or enlightenment or embodiment or whatever word you might choose to use for it, how do you define that process?
For me, absolutely. It's definitely a coming to myself. It's a full circle going back to the level I was at when I was maybe four. The wisdom that I had back then, the things that I kind of really knew to be true without asking it and just living without judgment like I did when I was maybe 4 or 5 years old. I feel like I'm getting back to that. Like I lost all of it when I grew up and I, you know, and everything was a question that needed to be answered on the outside. And then later on noticing that, you know, it's all that inherent wisdom is indeed within. It's not just a saying, it's really true and it's there for you and you can access it. And some people lose it and some people don't. I lost it, but I found it again, or I'm finding it again.
Yeah, that is so interesting because that is exactly how I have been describing my journey. Is that this year I feel I have come back around to my second grade self. That was my first, sort of moment of really like consciously understanding my connection to God. And so I also have took a long route around and like, I just feel like I've gotten back. So that's so awesome to hear you say that. Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about your childhood? Your childhood was not like standard American childhood.
No, my dad was American. My mom is German and we moved around quite a bit. So when I was a kid, we moved from New York, where I grew up, to Berlin, spent some years there, back to New York. And then when I was a teenager, I moved to Germany, lived there for 23 years with my mom because my parents had gotten a divorce. And, you know, spent a lot of time in Europe, and, you know, traveling a lot and seeing the world and all of that. But as a kid, I don't know. I kind of remember being very much in my own world, kind of feeling very alienated, kind of from what was going on around me. I thought a lot of things that were happening were strange. I felt kind of maybe like I didn't fit in, maybe. But also at the same time, things that were true for me, I knew they were true, seemed to be strange to other people. So I had to quickly learn how to adapt and kind of not seem weird.
Yeah.
Not say weird things.
Yeah. Was that hard or painful?
No. It was just like, oh, is this what I have to do now? Okay, I'll do that. Yeah, it was very, you know, till this day, I adapt very easily to what needs to happen so that I can, you know, live comfortably. And that's kind of how I always lived my life. I think a lot of women and girls just do that. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it's maybe not so good. You know, it's actually being able to adapt quickly is actually a blessing. It's really awesome because you can just coast and soar. You know, it just depends on, you need that maturity to know when it's appropriate and when it's not.
Hmm.
And as a kid, I didn't know. I just thought, well, if they say it's right, they must be, they're grown up. they know better than me. And so I would do whatever they wanted to. And now, you know, I realize not, it was not always the right thing to do, you know?
Yeah. So you didn't consider it to be like a betrayal of your true self. It was just...
I didn't see it back then. I thought that was my, those were my coping mechanisms and my survival strategies. Now I see it definitely as that. Now I see it as giving some stuff up that I should have kept. But, you know, as I said, I didn't see that back then. It was just about, you know, winging it and living life in a way that I could feel safe. Because I never felt safe as a kid. So that was the way to feel safe, was would to be liked and to be loved, right? If you're liked and loved, you're safer than when you're not. So I guess that's kind of...
What was the source of that feeling of insecurity?
I just think my parents were just both, you know, loners and traumatized in their own way, traumatized you know, upbringings. And my mom was born during the Second World War in Germany, kind of spent, you know, her days as a toddler in the basement when the sirens went off. You know, that's, I'm sure that's kind of, you know, that's kind of, and the times afterwards where food shortages and stuff like that, where everybody, you know, very battered and bruised Germany. And my dad himself had some issues with his family. So I just kind of feel like they were wandering through life. They weren't, you know, secure and stable in their own saddle. And, you know, who is? But, you know, and as a kid, I think I felt that. I felt that we were kind of just wandering through life, moving from place to place. They didn't really know what was going on. And so I learned quickly that to have some sort of safety, I needed to be, you know, part of the group, loved. The more I would comply, the more people would take care of me. Mm. You know, I wouldn't get lost in the mix if if people would latch on to me in some way, or so I would to them.
What were some of the challenges of your childhood growing up like that?
There's a lot of confusion. Also, I guess a lot between, which is kind of weird looking back, between German and English. So I grew up kind of bilingual. And then when I was six or so, we moved to Berlin. I'd spoken English primarily the whole time. Then we moved to Berlin. It switched to German. And I remember being confused by the different languages, understanding all of it, but not knowing which language was being spoken. I didn't know if somebody was speaking English or German to me. I just knew I understood it. Yeah. I couldn't differentiate between the languages because it was all like a mix. It was all mixed up my whole life, you know? And so I just, as a kid, inherently understood what was being said to me. And I think I spoke back in both languages. It's a little confusing. And also being confused of where am I? Where do we live? I didn't understand that we got in a plane, then we got out. I didn't know we were on a different continent. I knew we were somewhere really different, but I didn't understand where or why or where we were on the earth, right? Mm-hmm. So kind of a lot of confusion that kind of first when I went into, I guess, maybe second, third grade, then I understood what was happening, you know, where I was.
That's really interesting. I can remember when we moved across the street from one house to the next, my son said to me, "I've seen their house and they don't have any toys." And I was like, "No, we'll be taking our toys with us." You know, like, you don't know what your kids don't know. Like, your right. parents probably never showed you on a map, you know, no. this is where
Nobody.
We were.
No.
This is where, you know, we're going to be. And
oh, no.
You just, there's like a lot of things that kids don't know that you just don't realize, you know.
And you don't think of explaining that to them.
Yeah. Yeah, because right. there's so many things. Yeah.
Where are we? Why is everybody different? What? Something's different. This isn't, is this the U.S.? I don't, yeah.
But that sense of like, where am I, is like, that's really a really powerful thing to experience as a young person. Like, that's really destabilizing. Like, you're on a skateboard on the deck of a ship, you know?
And I think that's pretty much what you just described, that where am I, what's going on? That's kind of something that I never had. So I grew up with everything is movable. Everything is unpermanent. Everything can change at any time. And that's kind of how I grew up. If it's bad or good, I don't know, but that's definitely a big theme in my life.
Yeah. So how did, let's see, you were in Berlin from the age of 6 until?
7 and a half, just 1.5 years.
1.5 years, and then you were back in the States.
Yes.
Did you have a sense of how the two different countries affected you as a child in the way that you were growing up or what you were experiencing?
Well, it was definitely a very different world, especially back then living in Berlin, because back then it was still, you know, there was East Berlin. It was blocked off from West Berlin. And we were able to visit East Berlin. I remember that even as a kid going to East Berlin, going through Checkpoint Charlie. And as an American, you had to go through Checkpoint Charlie. And you'd pass through that border. And I remember all the men with their machine guns. And I remember that big difference between what West Germany and East Germany looked like, right? You went from the normal Western world. This is the, I guess, end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s. And then you stepped into this communist, you know, gray. The people looked different, the clothes looked different, everything was, it was a different world. And I remember that as a kid, obviously I didn't politically know what was going on, but I remember the hostility. I remember the faces of the men with the machine guns. I remember it being a very serious, and you know, the way my parents reacted, it was a very tense and creepy kind of a vibe, you know. And then coming to the U.S. and everything was definitely a lighter situation. It was, there wasn't that separation and that, I don't know, that weird Cold War vibe, you know. So that was definitely a big difference between the two, Germany and the U.S. Plus in the U.S., I guess we lived outside of New York, so it was more a rural situation. And then in Berlin, it was completely smack in the middle of the city. So there was that difference too.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So then later in life, when you, I guess, returned to Germany, did you have a sense that the two environments affected your path, your spiritual path, or...
Yeah, because since Germans and Americans are so different in their, you know, in the culture and the way they live life, it opens up another view to humanity, to people, to the way people think, the way they feel, the way they are. And in that, and to me, people are the way I understand the world, right? I understand through people. I don't get, like, my husband experiences life through nature. I don't do that. I can't connect to nature in the way he can. I connect to people, and people show me the world. People, emotions, feelings, things that I pick up from them explains the world to me. And that was just another way of explaining the world. So it opened up the world to me. It made it bigger. It made me understand more about myself and about the world in general. Yeah.
What was the first time that you had a conscious awareness of yourself growing up?
That's a good question. First conscious awareness of myself. I couldn't really tell you. I remember some stuff like when I was probably around 5 or 6, around that time, I think I did have some experiences. I remember when I was around 7, thinking that I had some, that I had originated from the sun. I don't know what that means, but to me it was clear that I had come from the sun.
Yeah. That's interesting.
To this day, I couldn't tell you what that was all about.
So how did you step onto the spiritual path? How did that happen for you?
I think a lot of that was, it came from my dad, slowly. I remember he was always telling me things as a kid, and I remember a lot of times thinking, what is he talking about? Like, he would tell me, listen up, you know, all the things that you see and you hear out here that's going on in the world, a lot of it is a lie. You know, a lot of it, the exact opposite is true. You have to understand that, right? And I was like, what are you talking about? How could this be a lie? How could that not be true? How could what we're seeing and what we're hearing not be true? And he said, well, reality, you know, he was explaining it to me, you know, a lot of things are depending on perception. A lot of things are we're told, but it's not true. And, you know, he kind of got me to a place where I would question things that I hear and that I see and what is truth. And, I guess that's the first little building block that I got for kind of waking up and thinking and daring just to ask some questions or to wonder about things. Okay. So then, and then you know, when you're a teenager and you don't care about anything except for yourself and how you're going to have fun with your friends. And that's pretty much your life, right? And school sucks and blah, blah, blah. And I guess the next time I even had time to turn around and think about these things is when I was a young mother. I had 2 kids. My kids were maybe, I don't know, 3 and 5. And that was the first time I had a breather again to kind of question some things and think about some things. But also because I had gotten to a point in my life where things seemed so, I don't know, so stupid and so pointless. And so, you know, what the hell am I doing here? Why am I here? This is so stupid. And so I had to kind of figure it out. I had to figure it out because I wasn't gonna, life was just too insignificant and boring to this being really it. So I needed to figure out if this was really it. I was prepared for, yeah, this is it. But if it's not, that would be awesome. It's important, just this, what I can see here. And so that's kind of why I went on that journey.
So where did that take you? How did you proceed? What did you do?
I started going this weird route of, I enrolled in culinary school. Okay. Yeah. Isn't that's very, intuitive, right? No, weird. But that's what I did because I went to things that were like tangible and you could feel it. And it was there and it was food. So you were eating it. It had to do with health. It had to do with, it went into that Ayurvedic and Chinese, the 5 Chinese elements kind of a thing. So I kind of got in touch with those philosophies, those Eastern philosophies around food. I could connect to that because I would love to cook back then. And that, on the other hand, so, and then, you know, they were talking about how to cut and how to bake and how to fry and the different energies that held, right? And that was the first time I came in contact with, you know, the way you cut your food, the way you fry it, and the way you prepare it is going to have a different effect on you on when you eat it. Mm-hmm. And then from the Ayurveda, I got to the yoga. Well, and yoga, that's of course pretty much the big portal for me, or was the big portal for me, because that was the first time I moved my body in a way that felt good to me. And I had never had that. I hated sports. Oh my God, I hated to move my body. I hated to jog or go to the fitness studio or anything. It was like a torture to me. But then when I started yoga, the movement and the way that you'd move your body felt so good to me. And I was so relieved that there was something. And then all of the philosophy behind yoga kind of opened up that gate for me. And now 9 years into it, or 10 years into it, I don't agree with all of that philosophy, and it doesn't mean as much to me as it used to, because I've gone, you know, I've branched out my own way, but that was definitely the portal to a different way of thinking and to a different worldview, mm-hmm. if you will. Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you, so we share a common background in yoga, and I'm wondering how you see the embodiment or the connection to the body as a spiritual practice?
That took a long time to establish, because I come from also like a long background of binge eating and overeating disorder. So I, that was kind of, when you do that, you disconnect from the body. But at the same time, your pain manifests in your body. It's kind of like a double thing. Most people say, oh, well, when you overeat, you have no connection to your body. I don't agree with that. I feel like if you overeat, you have a disconnect and a strong connection at the same time, because this is where it manifests physically. But at the same time, you're trying to get away from your emotions. So my body has always been an instrument of all the things going on within me, good and bad. And so after many years of practice, I was able to slowly establish a relationship to myself, to my body, that for me was just, it was only accessible through movement. And in this case, yoga, because it just happens to be a way that my body loves to move, that feels right. I know that other people love to run or love to lift weights and do, you know, or play tennis or whatever, and that feels good to them. That was my way. That was definitely the way my body wanted to move. And through that, and it's not, obviously it doesn't happen overnight, but through that practice, I was definitely opening channels and opening energy pathways, or whatever you want to call it. That something was happening, that I could get closer and closer and closer and closer to myself. And that was something I had as a kid that I got back. As a kid, I remember loving myself. As a kid, I remember being very kind to myself and thinking very good things about myself. Then I lost that, especially when I was gaining all that weight through my binge eating, you know, loathing. And I always thought, you know, the more I punish myself, the better person I'll be, right? Because if you punish something bad, then something good will happen. Well, doesn't work like that, right? And then I came back to, with all the yoga, I came back to speaking very nicely to myself, being kind to myself. And it turns out, you know, that's the way to feel good, not through punishment.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about how your experience with eating disorders got established and kind of where that journey took you?
I know that the overeating and the binge eating was definitely a very good way because it works very well. That's why people do that a lot. It's very effective. It was definitely a way to process feelings. I had never seen it, and that's a funny thing. I had never even entertained the idea of feeling like crap. Like if there was a feeling, bad feeling coming up, and obviously it had to be taken care of, it had to be gotten rid of. You have to get rid of that. It needs to go. It's not good, and so it's got to go. Nobody ever explained to me, no, that's super bad. It's unhealthy. You got to feel it, and then it will go. Because otherwise, it's going to get stuck, or you're going to go overeat, or you're going to have a big, some energy blockage in your body, and you're going to get sick. Nobody told me that. So I thought, right, bad feeling, got to get rid of it. Go eat. And eating absolutely did the job. Awesome. Good stuff. And it was like a twofold. Because on the one hand, while you're eating, you're getting those good feelings and you're pushing away the bad feelings. And at the same time, you're gaining weight. And in my case, it was a great armor. I had it all around me and you couldn't really get to me. It was a nice padding that I could, like a safety, like a stability that I could build up. And it was protecting me at the same time. It didn't feel good and I didn't like it, but the pain of being fat is very generic and very unpersonal. It's deflected pain. It's just like, oh, I don't fit in my jeans. Well, that's not that painful. It's just a drag. But the pain that the reason why I was eating, that pain, right? The real pain, the first pain, that was personal and maybe even shameful and maybe even hard to handle. And it was not like, oh, I don't fit in my jeans. It was like, here comes a big black ball and I'm afraid and I'm ashamed of something. So those things were way more personal and extreme than just being overweight. So you take the pain and you deflect, you transform it into something very generic. So it's still pain, but it's not quite as, it's like the food transforms it into
Yeah,
something else.
that's interesting.
Yeah.
So how did you begin to face the real pain? How did you get started with that?
Somewhere along that yoga journey, I was introduced to the idea of feeling feelings. That was new, of actually just sitting down and feeling them, taking the time to process them. And that was, for a lot of people, that's very scary, and it was for me too. And I started that. You have to start slowly. You can't just do it all at once, but you start it, and it quote, it worked. It felt better afterwards. And like they all say, and I didn't die. You think you're gonna die, but you didn't die. And later, by the way, that transformed into feeling your feelings over your body, which is also very, very effective. So when you get to that point, you start mastering the feeling emotions, and then you use your body too as a tool. Like you can move like all that stuff through your body. Who knew? You can move it through your body. I didn't. Crazy stuff. Love it. This is awesome stuff. Through that, through the yoga and all that philosophy, I got to that point where I was able to do that, and it started to slowly get better because now I have the tools. But then I had to take more time because I have like this big egg on my thyroid, right? And it's just a cyst and it's benign, but I feel like this is where some stuff got trapped on the way, on the way. So it went too fast and it's still some stuff got trapped. right in here. Mm. So I hope one day I can kind of, you know, see if I can kind of get rid of that somehow. But for now, that's...
How did you come to that realization that your feelings or your lack of, your inability to express them or whatever was manifested in the physical body?
You know, I was always wondering about this thing. And the time that it appeared in my life and the time that it grew so big, that's kind of the way I understood it. Doesn't mean it's true, but that's how I understand what this is. A lot of people that I follow in books that I read, people say that these things that get stuck in our bodies is stuck energy, right? That things where the energy doesn't move freely. And it makes sense to me because during that time, I was still winging it and trying to figure it out. I was kind of feeling my feelings, but you can't force yourself.
So I think that one of the things that that prevent people from getting on the journey to feel their feelings is that initially, it feels like, first, it feels like it's going to swallow you whole and kill you. And secondly, it almost feels like a bottomless pit because, you know, you don't know how deep and dark the pit goes. So it's an extreme act of courage to consciously set out on that path. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about how becoming more skilled at that has made that journey more manageable. Or has it?
That's kind of funny because just when you think it does, it gets harder, right? Just when you think I got this, say mama's on her way, you know, just when you think, you know, you're coasting along, bam, you know, comes this thing or this feeling or this situation or this vision into the depths of, you know, who we are. And you're like, holy crap, I'm still just messing around here on the surface. And this is all going on. And I'm just, you know, I knew how to live life. Now I know how to live life right, you know. It's funny to me because that's kind of what we have to accept. There is no end. There is no mastery. There is no enlightenment. All it is us winging it. And you can say, you know, you can be touched by, I don't care how many angels and guru so-and-so, we're all just winging it. And we're all masters and not masters at the same time. And I think when we finally find out what's going on here, you know, and I mean probably not while we're still alive in this situation here, you know, we'll be like, oh. We'll be like, oh. And I'm fine with that. You know, that's part of it too, to be like, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. I'm just here. I'm just going to do this. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to try my best to make this experience. What do we got? 85 years on this planet, maybe?
Sometimes it seems way too long. Sometimes it seems.
Yeah, it's like, I'm 45. Oh, God damn, another 40 years. All right. What are we doing now? You know, so.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, the difference is that I no longer fear the feelings because I know that they're fleeting. And I know I know what my process is for feeling them and letting them move through. Yeah. So it's not like, you know, it's like, all
like
right.
You used to, right.
Come on.
Yeah.
All right. Try me, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, that's enough mastery. Like that's you know, it's mastery and it's also very amateurish. As you say, you're working both ends of it at the same time. So how has your spiritual path changed your life, like in terms of how you spend your time and how you work and what your family dynamics are?
It's very much more peaceful because you get that perspective of not completely always being in the story, right? You're not always right immersed in the story. You do get a little bit of a couple of steps back watching the stuff happen. That's really cool because you don't react like all whipped up about every little thing anymore. You're not, you know, you stay away from the PTO as everybody should. You stay away from people who cause drama nothing can really shake you as much anymore, which is to say, I mean, some things, you know, when things happen to your kids or when there's, you know, when there are difficult things going on and you want to feel that and you should, and you should go through it and let it be and not say, you know, this is all just, no, I'm still human. I'm still a mom. You know, that stuff hurts me and as it should, I'm a human being. But it gets more peaceful. And a lot of people say, you know, I love coming to your house. It's always so peaceful. It's always so chilled and relaxed. And I guess people feel that, you know, that's why our friends from Germany or, you know, other places, other states like to come and stay with us because they always feel so relaxed at our home. And I'm glad that that's a part of it. We don't take part in the normal, how do I say this? We don't really take part in the normal life as much. TV shows that a lot of people really love, I can't watch it. It just doesn't, I don't resonate with that. So you do have a little bit of a disconnect to like a normal maybe culture. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's good or bad. It's just, I notice a little bit of, you do get a little quirky, a little different. But that's okay.
Oh, you're saying you become viewed as quirky or a little bit different. You're not, yes, following the mainstream culture the way everybody else seems to be.
Right. And that's kind of weird to me because on the one hand, I love people. I live by that. You know, I live by the connection to my friends and to my family, or mostly, but my friends. My family is my family. Those are the people, you know, I live with, but my friends are the ones that I pick out. So they're really just as important to me. And I love them. And I go, when I go out in the world, I feel and I connect to everybody. And so anyway, that's why it's so weird to me that shows that people love to watch and I go on Netflix and I turn it on, I don't even understand how they could watch 10 minutes of it.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah.
I can't connect to those things. I also really stay away from mainstream media, from the news and from all shows, all entertainment in terms of celebrities. And I just don't feel, it doesn't feel right to me. It feels very scary or I don't know.
Like
feels,
heavy.
Excuse me?
Heavy.
Heavy. Yeah. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
To watch that stuff. So it's kind of weird because on the one hand, like I said, I love people. And on the other hand, I there's something not quite right.
Yeah, it does definitely change you in really obvious ways. I know in my family, I have four kids, and if they're talking about some kind of show that they're watching or a movie that they've seen, and they'll like, their automatic response is, oh mom, you're not going to be able to watch that.
Right.
And so they know that I physically can't, it's just like clanging, yeah, putting your head inside a clanging bell, you know, yeah, it's just so discordant and uncomfortable, yeah, to and what it is basically is a vibration. Like those shows exist at a very low vibration. And when you've been cultivating a higher vibration, then there's like a clash. It just is uncomfortable to be drawn down like that.
Yeah.
So I think that one of the things about being on a dedicated spiritual path, like I know you are and I am, is that you have to be sort of loose with your attachments to people and experiences. Like, I can't, you know, I went through a period where I couldn't go to concerts because it was just too much energy. I was just too open to all the people who were there. I've since, like, that's changed a little bit for me. But there are certain things that I just can't do anymore, or certain things that I have to do more of. Or so my attachments to people and places and things and ways of being has to be a little bit more loose.
Loose. In what way loose?
Like maybe more fluid, you know, that I sometimes have to let people go who I care about because we're just not in resonance anymore.
Mm-hmm. And that could change.
Or that I know that I'm going to have to be more loose with who I am to be with them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, okay. I have to adapt to where they are.
Yeah. That's the story of my life.
More consciously. Yeah. So how does, what would you say are your methods of being a conscious parent? How does that come into your parenting?
There's a lot. in the different places we've lived, in the U.S., we've lived in South Carolina, we've lived in Houston, Texas, we've lived in outside of Chicago. That's where we are now. We've been to these different schools and environments and communities. And one thing I've noticed that a lot of the parents, whether it be the typical American families or the expat families, like they were in Houston, there were a lot of expats where we lived. There's this there's a strong underlying fear around school and academics. And that's something that I definitely, like, kind of like you, what I don't remember in this 80s as a kid, nobody really was interested in my school. But now people seem to be very interested in their kids' school so that they could go to college because, you know, people have to go to college now. But that's kind of what is thought. And so, you know, get your kid in a good college and there's that fear. So that's something I really had to back away from for my kids. I had to totally explain to them that I don't care about their grades, which is really weird and not done. And I think it was even freaking my kids out. But it worked for me. In the sense that my kids have a healthy relationship to, you know, in some things I get an A or a B, and in some things I suck like anybody. You know, do you know anybody who speaks five languages and is a math whiz? No, we have our strengths. You know, some people are good at this and other people are good at that. Anyway, so I try to not buy into that underlying fear. If you don't do well in school, you're not going to get in a good college and we're all going to die. So I try to, and you know, a lot of people I think would say that that's irresponsible of me. I just try to do things in a way that makes sense to me. For example, when I was a kid, my mom used to scream at me to do chores. I had to, you know, wash the dishes, and I had to clean the house with her on Saturdays and stuff like that, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I remember being screamed at for it. So that kind of is like a bit of a trauma in my life. And so I never asked my kids to ever do anything because of that trauma that I had. And it worked 50% of the time it worked. So with my son, it didn't work. You couldn't care less about helping anybody out in the house. But my daughter, who never had to do anything, just does it because she doesn't know that housework sucks. Nobody ever told her. Nobody screamed at her. She just sees people doing it. So she assumes it's fine. It's normal. It's part of life. You do the dishes and you do the laundry and then you clean up and this and that. So I kept it secret from her that it sucks. And so she says it, so stuff like that. I tried to turn things around, and my life view, the way I see life and the way I'm kind of like just like floating through all of this translates into how I'm a mother. Stepping away from, making sure we step away from fear as much as we can, right? Yeah. Also in this whole COVID thing, that I explained to my kids, caution's one thing, but fear is another. And let's figure out from where we're coming, okay? And that's something that I definitely try to give them on their way, is to think with your own mind and your own body, to understand the importance of your health spiritually and physically, what you put in your body, how you move your body, if you move your body. And then the third one is fear-based living versus open heart and, understanding you don't have it all figured out, and that's fine. But don't be afraid.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. So that seems like a good place to take a little break and maybe start our lightning round. Are you ready for that?
Yeah. Sure.
All right. What do you need to be happy?
I need to feel good in my own skin.
Do you prefer to text or talk on the phone?
I prefer to text. I'm one of those people like staring at my phone when somebody's calling me like, why?
What do you want?
And then I answer, hello?
I've gotten to where I actually prefer to, if I haven't spoken with someone for a while, I want to see their face. So I prefer, text is easy, but it's different, but I enjoy, hey, John, I enjoy like seeing face to face. It's nice. I like that. Okay. What age for you did you find to be most enlightening?
The older I get, the more. Every year more, with every passing year. Mm. The age I am now and the age I will be next year and the year after that.
Yeah, the present. So the present.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. How well do you sleep at night?
Pretty good. I used to have problems with insomnia, definitely. But these days I fall asleep. I actually fall asleep.
What do you attribute that to?
I think it definitely has to do with the life I'm leading, the mind space I'm in, the way I see life, the fear that's gone, the anxiety is gone, all of these underlying insecurities are starting to dissipate. And so sleep.
Nice.
Sleep.
Wonderful.
And dream.
And dreams, yeah. Oh, we didn't talk about your work with dreams, but for another time.
Another time.
Is it easy for you to cry?
Yes. And also cry over my body, which is new for me. That's the where I use my complete body and my face to cry.
Oh, consciously. Yeah. This is you like get everything into it.
I get everything into it. I need privacy for it. But if I use my whole body, it's very effective, very cleansing. It's a great way to process. It's awesome.
Yeah. I prefer to cry when laying on the hardwood floor.
Okay.
Stability there.
I don't need like pillows or, you know, like, no, I need like just like a hard surface.
Good stuff.
Okay. What is your ideal outside temp?
My ideal outside what?
Temperature.
Oh, 70s, 80s. That's comfortable. I don't really care. I just don't like when the air hurts. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you live in the Midwest, you know what that's like.
Yeah. Go out and your nose just like kind of like falls off and your eyes start freezing. No.
Yeah. All right. So that's my questions for you. Did you bring a question for me?
I'd like to know how you are. It might be a little too big of a question, but I'd like to know how you're handling this this whole weirdness going on right now. Like you're saying, you're feeling good and you're feeling stable and comfortable.
Yeah. Right?
And I like that.
Yeah. So what we're talking about is that we're actually meeting in the middle of our COVID-19 lockdown. And so as I mentioned earlier to you, I of course had some initial fears of in the beginning. My fears mostly centered on like how big is this gonna get, how far is it gonna go, what exactly is going on here, like, you know, just like inability to get any sort of reliable factual information. Given that, I also do not buy into whatever the mainstream media is feeding me. And there's so much information from coming at me from all different directions. And I was, you know, of course, like everybody wanting to stay on top of it. So now I, you know, we're a few weeks into it, and I have the tools to quiet my mind and to go into the peacefulness of my true nature. And so like I can stay there for a long time. And now it almost feels like I'm watching a movie play out. And I understand many dimensions of what's occurring. I can see the higher timeline, I can see the lower timeline, I can see the benefits, I can see the bigger picture, I can see also why people are fearful and have compassion for each's individual path through it. But I also think it's incredible that everyone on the globe is experiencing the same thing at the same time. And we're all aware of that. And that to me is like the magical gift in some way, that there's no denying that we as humans all experience the same things in completely different ways. And so I am hoping that I know that it will have a lasting effect on us as the human family. And I find myself frequently or almost all the time existing at that level of like the big picture for all of humanity. You know, like I don't get too hung up in individual stories because there's 7 billion stories. So I'm able to see like the one overarching story of what we're going through. And so I think that's probably why I've been able to keep my inner peace about the whole thing. And I also believe that our journey through this has great purpose. And so of course, that keeps me feeling hopeful and excited for the future.
Yeah, and for you, it's definitely after all is said and done, a positive movement. Things are going to shift in a good way. And I want to latch on to that. I'm not quite there yet. Maybe because I'm still inside of all of the going ons, not, of course, obviously not the mainstream media, but what's trying to be orchestrated in the background by a few powerful people. And that is also just a story. And at the end of the day, that's even scarier than the real narrative, you know what, so, and I shouldn't go there, you know, yeah. Because that's a dark place. That's a dark and scary place to go.
Well, so I think there is a way to observe what's going on, like some of the things that we're talking about are our personal feelings about mass vaccination and about human trafficking and darker agendas, all this stuff that is coming to the surface. Mm. There, you do develop the ability to witness that and to also maintain your view two steps back, just the way that you've learned to do it in your own life, not to be drawn into any one particular story, but to raise the perspective and see the ultimate benefit of all of that coming to light. As hard as it is to see it, and as heartbreaking as it is to see it, you can do both, you know? So that's kind of where I'm at, and I'm feeling pretty stable there. So thank you for the question.
Yes.
So Diana, I just want to thank you for being with me today. It's been wonderful. I love your bright, beautiful presence, and I'm super grateful for it in my life.
Me too. I'm grateful for you too, Kay.
Thank you.
I hope I can see you soon.
Yeah, that would be nice.